Welcome to The Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. My name is Emma and I'll be your host for today's episode. It's Women's Health Week, and because this podcast is brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services, we couldn't let the week pass without bringing attention to Women's Health Week. So Women's Health Week runs from the 4th to the 8th of September. And although the podcast normally goes out on a Tuesday, we're actually going to bring this episode out early because the health topic for Monday, the 4th of September, is Check Me Out. So it's Women's Health Checks, Cervical, Heart and Vulval Awareness. So this podcast series that we're in at the moment is around careers. But we're going to double dip a little bit because today's amazing guest is Kath Mazzella, OAM. Kath is a gynecological health advocate. She's a multi-award recipient, international speaker, and she's passionate about gynecological and vulval health. Kath is also the mother of three, and she's got six beautiful grandchildren. So thank you for joining me today, Kath.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So you are a gynecological health advocate. Tell me, what does that actually mean?
It means that I suffered with a gynecological cancer, and after that I discovered my daughter had polycystic ovaries and endometriosis, and then I discovered 173 million women in the world have got endometriosis, but it was all hush-hush and behind the closed doors and we have to be careful. I actually have vulval cancer, and it was like, you don't say vulva, you say vagina instead. And I thought, what is this all about? I just couldn't get my head around it for a long, long time to sort of think, why are we still so secretive about these issues?
Oh, my goodness. There's so much to unpack in just that one sentence. Let's start at the very beginning. For the people who are listening who might not know, what is the difference between vulva and vagina?
Well, I always say that the vulva is the vagina is where the penis penetrates, and the vulva is the external genitalia where the clitoris is found. So please, if anything else out of this, make sure you know that the clitoris is not inside the vagina. There is so much complication even in this day and age, and even some health professionals still call it a vagina. As a matter of fact, the other day I heard a professional female speaking about women's health, and I posed the question. I said, you know, what can we do about using correct terminology for the vulva? And she said, well, I tell my little girl that it's a vagina, and when she's old enough, I'll tell her it's a vulva.
Oh.
Go figure.
Well, I'm wondering what that age might be.
I think she was about 5.
No, I'm wondering what the age might be to make the distinction, like as in why we need to wait.
Well, I have no idea. It blows my mind that even these health professionals are still, you know, still keeping this stigma alive. So I don't know. But I know that there is I did see over the years, my 30 years of lobbying, that there was a vagina cream out there, and it says to rub on your vagina, but not for internal use. We can only laugh at it because it's still just crazy, crazy stuff. And there's a lot of historical and cultural, social and psychological factors that come into this. And, you know, sometimes me being so open about it, it may offend some people, but my plan is to save women's lives. It doesn't matter what culture you belong to, it's, you know, time we address this unbelievable issue.
Maybe I should have started the episode with a little warning that we are likely to use anatomically correct terms in this episode.
I forgot. I can be a little bit confronting, you know, and I'm just trying to be honest, but, you know, there are times some people might say I'm confronting, but I'm just, again, trying to save women's lives.
And you're not using anatomically correct language in order to shock people?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Are you happy to share a little bit about your story?
Yeah, sure. I had an abnormal pap smear back in 1988, and I had my cervix lasered, but, you know, I didn't ask or question why. They just said behind the toilet doors was, you know, have a pap smear. And I used to think, well, why don't men have the same thing? I just couldn't quite get my head around it. But I'm like a lot of other women think, I haven't got time to learn about all of that. So sometime after, a lump appeared next to my clitoris. And I went to two GPs and two gynecologists, and they said, oh, it's common, don't worry about it. And I was so embarrassed to even be showing my vulva to these experts and being told that it's nothing. But my mother had breast cancer, and she said to me, Kath, it's not normal to have lumps anywhere in your body, because she'd had breast cancer. And I thought, what would you know, Mum? Mm. You know, there's four experts that know all about this, and that's how naive I was. And so I asked for it to be removed, and it turned out to be cancer. And if nothing out of this, I want people to learn that, you know, you need to gain your own knowledge. You know, you might sort of think, oh, I don't want to know about gynecological health, but, you know, these experts do not know everything. And so, therefore, you need to take on the knowledge yourself so that you can protect your mother, sister or daughter or yourself.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, that was 1988, and I do understand that we have had a lot of things have changed since 1988, but we still treat doctors as gods. You know, well, the doctor knows everything, and I can't challenge that. Well, yes, you
they
can.
They do deserve respect because they work very hard, and I totally understand that. But sometimes some egos can get in place, and because we're so naive and we don't have the knowledge, I feel as though sometimes we're dumbed down as women because, you know, we know everything and you know nothing. But, you know, quite often our instincts, you know, it was like Mum saying that to me, and my instinct was, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't seem right. So, you know, we need to own some of our own responsibility when it comes to our own health.
That's exactly it. And I believe that everybody deserves respect, and go into all relationships, all conversations, respecting the people. I'm not the kind of person that believes that respect has to be earned. I think we give respect. But at the same time, as you say, if something doesn't feel right, then we need to be our own advocates, or advocates for whatever relative that might be, friend, whatever. It's around shifting that. There are so many things we need to shift, but shifting that idea that one doctor has said it's fine, therefore, oh, well, it must be because they went to uni for however many, whether it's years or decades. So, and I think, well, yes, but I've lived in this body for how many decades? So you got to trust yourself as well.
Anyhow, getting back to my story, I can divert at times. I went out and I thought, oh, what's happened to me? And then I found that a woman had died from a woman's organisation of vulval cancer before that. And they sort of said, well, I would appreciate if you didn't speak about it because she just died. I thought, okay, well, I'll just do as I'm told. And then I found another lady who just had the same operation, had my clitoris, vulva and lymph glands removed. And she had the same 8 months previous. And I can't tell you enough. We see the breast cancer women all come together. Mm. The fact that I had found somebody who had experienced the same as me, who'd suffered in silence the same as me, and treated like we should be quiet the same as me. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. So I put an ad in the Woman's Day, and all these ladies wrote me, handwrote all these horrific, horrible, horrible stories. And I thought, oh, my God. But I took it to a women's health centre. Oh, yes, and I had all the ladies' letters. So I thought, what should I do about this? And so I decided to have have a support network. And so I formed GAIN, which is Gynecological Awareness Information Network. And then nothing was happening from that. It's like as if, ordinary women can't do these sort of things. The breast cancer women can, but anything gynecology, it's a different mindset. So, so I thought, what can we do about this? So I rang Senator Amanda Vanstone in Parliament, and I said, look, got all these ladies' letters, nobody's talking about these things, women are suffering in silence, what can we do? And she said, we'll have a national day. I said, but how do you do that? She said, well, you just declare it. So I just declared it.
Just go and stand on a street corner and go, I declare. how do you declare it?
Well, that's what I thought. So if it's that easy, I have now, through GAIN and through my own my own lobbying. I have established an International Gynecological Awareness Day. Shock horror, you can't do that. You've got to go through the ropes and the bureaucrats and whatever else. I don't have time to wait for that. But, you know, so here we have the Gynae Awareness Day, which I'm pleased to say that King Edward Hospital have celebrated the Gynae Day for the 9th year this year.
Oh, fantastic.
And I know. And, you know, it's fantastic that Graham Broadley, who is an ex-midwife, and he's a part of the establishment at King Edward, and he has always been very supportive, so much so that I am the Australian Gynecological Cancer Foundation ambassador. And so through there, they have now got a vulva socks campaign. So I wear, as a matter of fact, I got my vulva socks on today. And people say, oh, shock horror, vulva socks, how could you do that? But King Edward Hospital staff, I'm told, are going to be wearing vulva socks for the Gynae Awareness Day. And I can't begin to tell you how hard this has been, but how exciting it is to see doctors and nurses wearing vulva socks. So I just hang out for the day to see that. So,
My youngest child does aerials, and we were at her end of term showcase or whatever. And I happened to see a midwife who I used to teach belly dancing to probably 20 years ago. And she came up, and the baby that she was pregnant with when I taught her came up and said hello, and both of them were wearing the vulva socks. And so she performed her aerials routine in her vulva socks, and it was just hilarious because she then went over and showed her granddad her vulva socks and just kind of the emotions, because he really, really wanted to support his granddaughter, but also I don't know how I'm supposed to respond to this. All of the emotions. And he just went, oh, they're very nice, dear.
But you can see how the vulva socks can create conversation and sort of have a bit of fun with gynecology. You know, it's such a serious topic, and, you know, it is sense of an intimate. I mean, I'm not out there going flashing vulvas all over the place, but, you know, a vulva sock, how's that going to hurt, you know?
Yeah, no,
but we are having a vulva. The theme at King Edward Hospital is gynecological and vulval awareness. So that's fantastic. The Gynecological Awareness Day this year, we're having a vulval awareness at King's Park. And the lady who's coming alongside with me, I'm not sure whether I should mention her name on here. I don't think she'd mind, but I'd probably get permission. Her daughter had lichen sclerosis, which 1 in 80 women have got, according to Jean Hales, Women's Health. And she actually died last year at age 23, and they brought her wedding forward so she could be married before she died. Mm. So there's some very, very sad stories out there that perhaps nobody wants to hear about, but I think we do need to hear about it if we're supposed to progress, because I know that there is a gynecological cancer research organisation out there that don't have a vulva diagram in their reproductive cancers. And I have questioned as an advocate to say, well, why is there no vulva in this day and age? And they said because they don't get funding for it. But whether you get funding or whether you don't, you still can put a vulva diagram here. And there's still, even if it exists, the stigma still exists in this day and age. And it's taken me 30 years to even get this far and to watch people wearing vulva socks. So I'd love to encourage everybody out there to get your vulva socks on and shout out Viva La Vulva.
So I will, if you're able to provide them to me, I will include links to the Kings Park event and where people can buy vulva socks in the show notes. So I've just written myself a little note so I can remember to get the links from you for those.
Okay.
So going all the way back, what was your experience like of being diagnosed with the cancer and then going through the operation and then how that changed your life afterwards?
Absolutely. Now, I probably divert here, but I'm very good at diverting from how I experience, but I want to do that here because it was very, very sad. I tried to protect my children who were teenagers at the time. I didn't want them to know that I'd have vulval cancer because, you know, teenagers probably at an agent stage. But and my daughter was really upset that I didn't tell her until I had the operation. But it was, I remember the nurses coming in, and I know that the nurses were feeling for me. You could feel that, you could feel the vibes. That's like, oh God, this is so, and it's gross. There's no other word but gross. I mean, I just feel as though it was cut until my femaleness was just cut away, and I was no longer a female. And, you know, I went home and everybody went on about their business, and I thought, what the hell just happened to me? But when I turned to the women, it's the women turned their backs on me, and that's what I couldn't quite understand. Why would you do that to me? But now I understand why they did. I understand their history, and I discovered the word pudendum in the dictionary, and the Latin version of that word says female genitalia, one who should and ought to be ashamed, the shameful part of a woman. So we all call it a vagina. Even in this day and age, we still call it a vagina because I think of that stigma. Anyhow, I'm diverting again.
It's okay. I'm coming back to the stigma later. So it's on my list of things to talk about. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you might have to draw it out of me. I'm happy to talk about anything. But, you know, even when I talk about it today, I feel that I can know that the tone of my voice changes, and perhaps I need to go and have some work on this. But my gynae work is my therapy. You know, some women have not lived through this, and I've lived. So it was sad. How do you describe having your femaleness cut away from you? How?
Can I just interrupt for a second? So you said it was the other women that shut you down, and now you understand why that was. So in what way did they shut you down?
The first group said, well, our friend just died, so I prefer you didn't speak about it.
Yeah.
And they said, because I didn't have a degree in anything, one of them said I was psychosocial, because, you know, I didn't have the education. And the other groups, you know, I went to some church groups and I didn't quite fit in there. And I went to some cancer centres, and there was nobody else talking about gynecological cancers. And, I just went searching. But I remember being at a meditation group once, and I was very, very sad. You know, it's hard to point out how sad this is. But I remember we're in meditation and I couldn't meditate. I couldn't get it. But then somebody walked past me and just touched me on the shoulder, and it sort of sent a shiver up my spine. And I thought, oh, my God, that sort of was reaching my pain, even though it was very sensational. But it reached the core of my sadness. I don't know why I remember that, but it's hard to describe how these women are surviving, and even the ones that are dying, you know, to express their anger that this can happen to women, and yet there's still no friggin' vulva diagram.
And no funding. Yeah.
But while we as women don't support one another, like what they do with the breast cancer, then nothing is going to change. I'm diverting again.
So
that's sad.
That's okay. I'm going to divert as well. So you said that prior to going in for the surgery, you didn't tell your children. Do you think that you would have told them if it was a different kind of cancer?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Because even I didn't even know it was a vulva or a vagina. I mean, that's how naive I was. But most women, a lot of women still today don't know it because we blind it out. I don't know whether that's such a word, to blind out. It's like, I haven't got time. It's like me back in the day. I haven't got time. I'm busy. I haven't got time. I will leave that to my experts. But it is not the way to go for the future.
Yeah. And so you then went through the surgery and felt as though that all of the female in you was being removed.
Yeah. But when I went to look at my notes, I realised that some people, like the human papillomavirus, that was my abnormal pap smear, I wasn't told that it was a sexually transmitted infection. I wasn't told that most people have the HPV infection. They didn't have the vaccination at that stage. And I felt very betrayed by the medical system, betrayed by the women.
Were you married at the time?
Yes, my husband Tony, he was he was my rock, and he, you know, I don't know whether it was, he had to clean my vulva out because you really, it's really a challenge to get in and around. I've only got the urethra left, and you have to clean around it, and you know, you can use a shower, but sometimes with what I had left, and I hated him having to do that, you know. Mm. It just, and so there was a lot of anger that having to have that done, but I have to
and
say
having to have that done by somebody who is an intimate partner, but that's you know, it's a real shift in the relationship to have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what's happening to, this happened to me 30 years ago. It's still happening to the men that are, stand alongside their women. A lot of the men leave because they can't cope with it. But unfortunately, 18 months after, Tony, well, he was 49, he had five heart bypasses. Because he couldn't cope with what was going on. There was no support. And he's not the most conversant sort of man when it comes to emotions and, you know, deep emotions like that. So it was a challenge all around. And it took me, I would say, a good 2 years to get my head basically around.
It sounds, I hadn't considered those aspects of it as well. And no. What that must do to your sense of self.
Yeah.
Being reliant on somebody to clean you.
I know. I mean, you can't imagine the men, because we don't talk about men and gynecology.
Mm.
You know, the partners of these women, it's like, yeah, well, they're just there. Some of these men, the fathers, the brothers, they're all in the dark and think, well, what's going on? They don't understand. And it's not just about the vulva, it's the endometriosis, polycystic ovaries, having a hysterectomy, fibroids, menopause. I mean, the list goes on. And yet there's not a lot of funding for, like, even the women's health centres.
Tell me about it.
They live on the smell of an oil rag, and it has to stop. But I'm really, really pleased to say that the Health Minister of Australia, his assistant minister is Jed Carney, and she has just put out a media release asking for women to share their gynecological health stories. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a huge, it's like 30 years I've been waiting for something like that to happen. So I really appeal to women that are listening to this to consider either writing your own story or your mother's or your sister's daughters. And if your grandmother's died, you know, try and see if you can put together some stories, because this is the only way we're going to get some funding towards women's health.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, 30 years is a long time. So how do you keep going for 30 years?
I keep getting these women's stories, and I see the injustice of it, and I see the lack of power in women. You know, you hear about these business women that are powerful or whatever, but, you know, don't say gynecology and don't say vulva. And it's, I just can't live in this world when we're so in the dark. It's just, and people say, well, you know, do I really need to know? Well, perhaps you don't, but perhaps you do. Because, you see, there's a lot of taboos that still exist, and there's a lot of gender inequality and patriarchy that still exist out there. And the media is still reluctant. The media still call the vulva a vagina.
If they even use the word.
And because even when you hear a show on TV, every now and then you might hear the word vulva, but most of them use the vagina. And a lot of the religious organisations are still yet to deal with this. And once we can sort of get into the history of, like, the word pudendum, this is where it all came from back then, you know. And I just think we need more of a female focus. A lot of people are fearful, and we've got to get rid of the fear. And you might say, well, how do we get rid of the fear? I've got an undies campaign happening. We had a Red Knickers Day last year, and it was great to get people bringing along their cardboard cutout red knickers. But I also do workshops with little knickers, and you know, we decorate it with, you know, leftover bling and lace and whatever. And I've got a song that we sing it called the Gynamite Song, and it's sort of something like, "Ladies to the left, ladies to the right, don't forget your dynamite. We care a lot, so spread the cheer to look after what's down here. We are here to raise a cheer, so don't forget your pap smear. Shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it." Fun when they have all the undies and see them all together. And
yeah.
It's like, but But a lot of people say, oh, you can't do that. And I'm saying, but who said you can't do it?
Yeah.
Where is this coming from? Is it the religion? Is it the government? Is it the women? You know,
it's just
even from
culture, isn't it?
Yeah, it is culture. But even from a United Nations Women's Day, I've been along to many of those places and paid out a fortune to go to their events, waiting, hoping, praying that one day they will say something about gynecology. I have approached them and it just falls on deaf ears. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, we have enough. That's what I'm trying to do, is get a driving force to say, okay, we want changes with gynecology. I had the WA quilters made up a Moulin Rouge quilt for me, and it was a gorgeous thing. And so I went to visit my son in London, and I wanted to show him the quilt while I was there. And that was the year I won the West Australian Senior Australian of the Year. And a lady who was a sexologist from Perth, she was in London, and she said, oh, Kath, bring your quilt into the BBC TV front counter and we'll ask if you can have an interview. And I thought, as if BBC TV is going to be interested in me from downtown Perth. But as it turns out, the next week I was on BBC TV Women's Hour talking about vulva health and gynecological health and the Gynae Awareness Day. And when I came back to Perth, I rang the media organisation, and they said their constituents wouldn't be interested in gynecological health.
It's really interesting, because I remember probably about, it must have been about 20 years ago, Sunrise was on the television, and David Koch said something about when he was raising his young daughters, his wife was really big on making sure that they used anatomically correct language and they knew the difference between a vulva and a vagina.
Wow.
And the women who were sitting on the couch next to him, I think they actually spat their drinks out and they quickly went to a commercial break. And I remember watching it going, wow. And he, male, and but he's married to he's married to a nurse is what I meant to say. And, you know, so for him it was just, well, this is the language that we use. So I think often we're worried that, well, it might offend men's delicate sensibilities.
Yeah. Yes.
Does it though? So it's just a word.
but I bet you that most men would call it a vagina still. So there's a lot of education.
Probably, because if we don't tell them, then how are they going to know?
Exactly. Yeah, and if we don't see it on TV, you know, or on movies, that, you know, they call it a vulva. But, there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, there is a long way to go. I understand that this is a bit like playing ping pong, with being all over the place with asking questions. So how long did it take before you were you able to let go of the anger before you started your advocacy work? Or was that a driving force? You're now 30 years later. Have you managed to kind of let go of some of those issues? What was that part of your story like?
I value my anger. I still have anger. I value my frustration. I value my knowledge that I have gained. I value that I'm still breathing.
Mm.
So, you know, I just sort of think that the anger, which is a driving force as well, but my empowerment, I am very empowered to know the difference, and I'm not afraid to stand up to anybody. And I don't mean stand up fighting. It's like I stand up to question.
Yeah.
Because while I know women are suffering like this, well then, you know, how can I live in a world that women are so powerless?
And it's not standing up, like you say, it's not standing up for a fight. It's just holding space and holding ground and not Absolutely. Being prepared to quieten down because of stigma. Yeah.
You see, I value that you have this women's health background experience. And I spoke on Women's Biz yesterday, and the leader of that is Annie Gibbons, and she's a nurse as well. And, you know, I find it interesting, because when I used to turn to women's groups, you know, they'd keep me at bay. But now women like you and others and King Edward Hospital, it's all coming out. And I need you to understand how excited and how happy I am that I stuck to my guns and I drove this as fast as we can. I wanted to also tell you, through my not-for-profit, we sent a petition off to the government in 2005, I think it was, and they had a Senate inquiry, and all the senators travelled around Australia, and one of them was dying of ovarian cancer, Senator Jeannie Ferris. Mm. So I had to go to Canberra and sit in Parliament House with all these, you know, talking about ovaries and all these other things. And they didn't say that there was no mention of vulva. And I thought, I haven't come all this way not to say the word vulva. So I said, we're having a Vulval Awareness Day in Perth. And one of the senators said, excuse me, Ms. Mazzella, how do you profess to advertise such a day? I said, well, I've just won the Zonta Western Australia. That National Council of Women are promoting it, and it's being held at the Catholic Hospital. And they all sort of looked at each other and thought, oh, my God, you know, this one's got out of the bag. So, but from there they had the Senate inquiry, and that's how the National Gynae Cancer Centre was established, and that's why I've got the Cancer Australia Award for Gynecological Cancers. But, I mean, I'm saying I've got 10 awards, but the awards mean nothing if there's no action. You know, we need to have the Gynae Awareness Day. We need to have the knickers out there and you know, just have some fun. And we need to get communities to, the quilting ladies, to get in and make quilts with funky little undies or, you know, sensual little undies or whatever. And we need the community to think outside the box, so to speak. Pun.
That's it. Pun 100% intended.
But I must say that I have done a presentation with the Red Hatters, two clubs recently, and all the other Red Hatters saying, yes, we want to do it as well. And I presented to CWA in Donnybrook, where I have a fashion parade. And my physios has made up some sashes for me, and it's got Miss Vulva, Miss Vagina, Miss Uterus, Miss Cervix and whatever. So the ladies wear the little crowns on their head and their little tutus, and they come out and here's Miss Vagina, here's Miss Vulva. but even to get, you see, you've got to find the right leaders who can see the potential of this. And that lady at the CWA, she could see it. And I have been liaising with the Southwest Women's Group, who are considering to come on board with the quilting and with the knickers campaign for next year.
Yeah.
Because we've got to build up to it. But, I mean, how amazing would that be to see all this come together? I would just sit back and think, well, it was well worth the 30 years.
And so for people who, you know, who may look at the idea of being a health advocate and go, well, that's something that I'm passionate about, that's something that I want to do, how do you actually get started?
Okay, so I suggest you go to the Health Consumers Council. There's one in WA and throughout Australia, and they will guide you through what's the best thing, how other people have done it, and how they can support you with it. So, but I think you need to gather up all your information and why you need to be an advocate, and make it more clear when you go to the Health Consumers Council. But they're there for exactly that. But also you need to lobby your politicians, because the politicians are there for that reason. And so you go there and say, look, you know, I've got this idea, I want to do this, can you help me? And find out if there's any funding to do that.
How do you look after you? So I'm imagining that there's a lot of, particularly in the early days, there's a lot of, you know, doors being slammed in your face, phones being shut, you know, slammed down on you, people laughing at you, kind of those types of responses. How do you then shake that off and get up the next day? Or how do you look after yourself so that you're not burnt out from this, or that you still have the passion?
Well, that's a damn good question. When I reflect back, I think, how did I get through all of this? But I know that I've got four sisters, and I was so lucky, and my mum was still around. My mum only passed away last year, but my mum was my biggest advocate, and my sisters, I always had them to turn to, which, you know, was really good, because if I didn't have them, I guess you'd find friends and that. But I think I was probably a bit of a pain in the neck talking about it so much in those days that I might have turned a few people away. But I've always had my sisters. So I think that's
it. They're related. They can't leave you, can they?
No, that's right. But, you know, but they are able to say, okay, that's enough of that, Kath, and whatever. And they would come along to the Gynae days and support and all that sort of things. But I also spoke at the Australian Nurses and Midwifery Conference a few years ago. And I know I spoke to the director at the afternoon tea from there. And she said, Kath, the nurses so need this information. But we can't we can't get that education in there unless there's a groundswell and unless there's funding and unless the government will give that funding, it's not going to happen. So I was hoping to use the Gynae Day as a tool for corporates to even flash their undies. But I know that I did have a pair of undies and it's got a little, it's got a little undie that goes over the top. So underneath, if you lift that little bit, the flap up, the underneath there is a diagram of the ovary, cervix, uterus, vagina and vulva. But my cousin took a pair to work and asked whether she could hang it in the ladies' toilets. And they said yes. But within a few days, the women said it was too confronting for them. So they had to take it down.
Wow.
I know.
I find this really interesting. I find it baffling. So often we hear with about men that men don't go to the doctor, men don't discuss mental health, men don't look after themselves. That's not my experience. My experience is that men actually, if something's wrong, they go to the doctor. You know, women, we don't have time to go to the doctor. Men find time to go to the doctor. I find men of all ages are generally more than happy to speak about mental health. They're more than happy to speak about prostate health or, you know, and yet women, my life outside of this, I run tabletop gaming. So we have a lot of, it's very male dominated. Put a post up about mental health and I can get 50 comments on it from men about their experiences with mental health. Similar post with women, crickets. But put a post up with sandwiches cut in the shape of a teddy bear and they're all over it. But we hear women, you know, oh, women don't get taken seriously at the doctors because for the slightest thing they go to the doctor. No, they don't. They're too busy. You know, women are hypochondriacs. No, unless a limb is falling off, we don't go to the doctor. So,
well, that's right.
And what do we do to get women to a point where I just cannot understand how women find a picture of female reproductive organs to be confronting. I'm not asking you to flash yours to your co-worker. No, it's a diagram.
Right. Just get the knowledge. But I really would like to open up the effects of gynecological health and mental health. But it seems when I go to the mental health people, like, oh no, that doesn't fit in the equation. But you just having a bad period alone can cause so much angst, whether you're in the workplace or at school. And it's like as if, yeah, but that's not a mental issue. But it is a mental issue. There's so much work to be done.
Oh, there's so much work to be done. But we have come a really long way. So you've been doing this for 30 years. I've been in the women's health space for 20 years. We've come a really, really long way. You know, I remember, I mean, it was ridiculous. I held a menopause information session. I think I was 22 when I was facilitating. But there were women in the room who found it offensive to use the word menopause. And could we call it MPS? I was like, no, it's menopause. Like, it's just a word. And we need to, you know, we need to get rid of the fear of language. And now, obviously, we can all talk about menopause I very rarely hear people who find the word confronting. So we've come a long way. There's just still a lot of work to do.
Sorry to interrupt, but I still think that sometimes we need to hear the graphic, horrible, horrible stories to make women realise and think, oh, my God, I have to check on that. Because if we keep being nice all the time and, you know, quiet about it. I remember I was going through menopause because I was radiated for 6 weeks from my belly button down to my groin. And from that, I get every so often, I haven't had it for a while, but over the years, I had cellulitis. Ooh. And cellulitis is where your stomach burns from where the radiation was. But I guess we don't want to frighten women that if you have a gynecological cancer and then you have to have the radiation, how horrible it is. But the thing is, it is what it is. And if you can prevent this from happening to you through the knowledge, well, then so be it. And it's being clear about that message of why we need gynecological health awareness.
I think as well that you're still alive. This is 30 years later and what you went through and the changes for your life, I'm not minimizing how horrendous that was and, you know, experiencing the radiation and the cellulitis as a result of that. You are still alive because you found it relatively early and you advocated for yourself. And I think we need to hear that as well. So if you don't do that, how many women have died from this? You know, you spoke about when you were first diagnosed and you went into that group and said, oh, well, we can't talk about it because our friend has just died. Yeah. Hearing those stories about people who have died because they haven't done something is powerful. Yeah. It's also really powerful to hear from people who found it early on and as a result of that, they're still here 30 years later.
Well, that's right. But when I hear of women dying like that young 23-year-old, I think, have I failed? You know, if I'd have spoken out sooner, if we'd have got more funding. But I remember in 2002, I received an email from the Journal of Women's Imaging in America. And the lady said that she was the writer for the journal. And she said that her friend had died 25 years previous. But she said, I've watched how the family have suffered over the years because there was nothing out there. So they put all this scanning and stuff up about vulva health to the specialist. So I thought, well, that's one small step for womankind as well.
Yeah. And all of those small steps or, you know, drops in the bucket fills up. We will get to the point where the bucket's overflowing. It's just...
Yeah, but I need to see that in my lifetime, and I think that's why I'm sort of driving and even talking with you today. I need some action.
Yeah.
And I just appeal for people to take some sort of action.
What would that look like?
Well, it would like all the women's health centres are given enough funding to have some entertainment on the day, you know, and so that they can get the message out. And we had a great gynae debate. I would love to have a great gynae debate in Parliament House. But again, they're not going to do that if there's no groundswell of women's health centres organising it. But it's the schools having competitions of who makes the best pair of knickers and opening the conversation. I know I spoke at a private girls' school once, and one of the mothers, she said, oh, would you mind if I got up and spoke? And she got up and told a little bit of a story. We had a burlesque girl, she came along to do a dance, and she said, would you mind if I told my story? And I thought, well, you know, I love it, you know, when women can speak out and feel empowered just by sharing a story. It's not that hard.
And that's kind of the purpose of why this podcast started, because so many women's stories are still hushed up. And, you know, it is so powerful to be able to share that story and to have a space to be able to share that. And I think that, you know, if anybody wants to share a story, I'm the kind of person that will... I'm happy to hear the story. I'd love to hear the story. Let me ask nosy questions. But so many other people don't know how to respond when they hear that story because it is still hushed up. So I think we've got a couple of things we need to do. We need to create space where women like that on the day have an opportunity to be able to speak. But also we need to teach the women who are hearing the story how to respond.
Exactly. You know, even writing like Jed Carney asking for people to share their stories, some are too reluctant to do that because they're afraid they might upset the doctor or the medical system or, you know, whatever. But we've got to get rid of that fear. And
how would you like people to have responded to you way back in the early days? So when you were first telling friends, family that you had been diagnosed and you were going through the surgery, what would have been a helpful response from people for you in that situation?
Well, first of all, I would have liked to have had a brochure that had a vulva on there because the vulva was always cut off. Secondly, I would have liked somebody to put their arm around me and just, you know, acknowledge that, you know, this is a horrible thing. I remember going to a clinical psychologist and she said, and what happened? And I went, and she went, and then what happened? I thought, I'm here.
Because bearing my soul to you.
I'm burying my soul and you're just writing notes down. And I know that they can't become involved with whatever. But if I'm upset and crying, you know, if a dog is in pain, you pat the dog.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the way clinical works. But, you know, I would just recommend somebody being more compassionate and understanding. But it's the fear in them, I think, that they didn't know how to deal with me. So, and things have changed since then. But when I hear women suffering and dying, it just breaks your heart.
Yeah, I think as well it can be, I don't want, if I say, oh my God, that's terrible. Is that going to make it worse for you?
Well, that's right. You don't know how it's going to go.
But really, it is terrible. And it's okay to acknowledge that and to go, that's awful. Is there anything I can do?
That's right. You just put it out there and they say yes or no. Yeah. So, but I think, I was told even this morning that the statistics, I think it's about 430 women get vulval cancer throughout Australia. But let me ask you whether there's a precancer as well. So if there's a precancer, they might just chop a bit of vulva out and chop another bit of vulva out. It's like, yes, but that's not on the statistics. So this is where the research comes into it. But this is where the funding comes into it as well. So, you know, it's only 430. Who cares? Breast cancer is 10,000. But the devastation or, you know, the catastrophic, even having some of your vulva removed and how that affects your sex life with your husband and things like that. Speaking of sex life, people always, when I speak, come up after and they say, can you have sex?
Oh, totally on my list of questions. Yeah. I told you, it's a ping pong game. We're going all over the place with this one.
I know, you'll have to bring it together. But I can still have sex, and I still do have sex even in my maturing age. But so you can have an orgasm without a vulva, without the clitoris, because it's just inside the vagina. And I'm told that there's more nerve endings in a vulva than there is in a penis. So spread that word, girls. But it's a challenge for me to have sex, you know, because, you know, it takes a while to wind the old girl up, but I guess it takes a while to wind any girls up, old girls. Yeah, it's hard. And, you know, sometimes it may be painful later on, you know, after the fact. But the thing is, sometimes it's really, really worth it.
How long was it after the surgery before you did attempt sex for the first time?
Well, it could be 2 years, I think.
That's a long...
Yeah, because you sort of look at yourself in the mirror and, you know, you would sort of think, oh, my God, that's so ugly as hell. And then if Tony having to clean me out, it's like, oh, that's as ugly as hell as well. So we've had to learn to be intimate in other ways as well. So we're still here 30 years later and, you know, I have to be mindful that I need to, you know, we still need to be creative in being more affectionate. I'm not saying sex, but being affectionate. Mm. And sometimes I'm not very good at that, so I need to get back into that.
Oh, you know what I mean? You've been married a long time. So, and look, in all seriousness, when you've been married a long time, it's easy to take your partner for granted. So I think we all need to be reminded that sometimes, you know, maybe a little bit more affection might not go astray.
Well, that's right. But I think you sort of, as you get older, you're sort of just happy to have each other, you know?
So you've spoken about how at the start you were afraid to talk to your children about it. How have they been with the fact that you are so open about your story and now your grandchildren, as they're growing up, you know, you don't shy away from talking about anything?
Well, no, I don't. And I've got 5 granddaughters and they all know what a vulva is. And
I bet they do.
And I know I was speaking to a lady recently and she's taught her daughters that it's a vulva. But when she went to the school, the teacher said it was a vagina. And this little girl said, no, it's a vulva. And she said, no, the whole thing is the vagina. And so the mother was going to question the teacher about it because it's got off track there. What were we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about how your children and grandchildren feel about it.
Oh, yes. I mean, the grandkids are okay. My kids are still, they're still a little bit iffy about it. I still think they feel uncomfortable. But, you know, what can I do about it? It just is what it is. And for me to get out there and be so open, they just have to suck
it
up.
Accept Mum the way she is, yeah.
Because, you know, I am what I am and this is my mission and journey in life. And if that's what it is, well, that's what it is.
Yeah. Where would you like to see your mission? Like, what's your end goal?
Well, the end goal is the UN Women picking up on this and all gynecological organisations celebrating the Gynae Awareness Day and having some fun. And I'd like to see some underclothes company come on board, you know, like Bonds or whatever, just to show their support. And because you see, I see the cricketers and the footballers and everything
Yeah.
supporting prostate and breast
And breast
cancer.
cancer.
And I think, what are we, if I just, I remember one time I saw all the Harley Davidson motorcycles take their money up to Parliament House and all dressed in their pinks and everything. And I thought, oh, if I only could have one of those dollars. So I rang the Harley Davidson motorcycle group and the man said, hold on, I'll put you onto my wife. So he put me under the wife, and then they decided to do a fundraiser, and I sat on the back of a Harley Davidson with this gorgeous young thing, and I've never been on a motorcycle in my life, and we drove down to Mandurah somewhere, and there were 60 motorcycles behind me, and even now I try and get it to wipe the tear out of my eye to sort of think,
Yeah.
what the hell? So I've had some really, really fun times, but it's still a challenging time, and that would be the ultimate to see that, like the motorcycle riders get behind and all the organizations just sort of think, wow, this is so important.
It must be a great feeling to see Jean Hales actually acknowledging vulval health and vulval health checks as one of their days for Women's Health Week.
Well, yes, because I was the Women's Health Champion last year, I was given opportunities to do a podcast, but I would like to sort of have more of a visual. I'd like to have a group of women and the mothers who the people that have affected. I'm not just talking the woman themselves, their families, to say, hey, this is an important issue. So, I mean, I will lobby for that next year, but my family has just gone back. They've stayed at my house for 6 weeks and they went back yesterday. All I have to say, it was so amazing that they went, but I mean, even I'm suffering today to sort of think, oh, they've gone, and
Yeah.
well, we had a great time, but I haven't had time to work on the Goni Awareness Day because we've been away all the time. So hopefully it will come together and I'll just work on the next few weeks. But if anybody's out there that wants to come along to the Goni Vulval Awareness Day at Kings Park, yeah, I would appreciate for you to come along and support.
So, as I said, I'll put a link for that in the show notes, but what date is that?
It's September the 10th, and my birthday, from 1:30 to 3:30.
And whereabouts in Kings Park? Because Kings Park is massive and I get lost there often. Is
No,
it the Women's Memorial?
they've got a new, it's got a new Aboriginal name, and I'll have to just send you the
That's
link
fine. We'll
because,
pop it in the link. Yep. Yeah. I did throw that one out at you with no notice. So, as we're about to wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to say about your journey as an advocate or, anybody who's experiencing vulval cancers or, any final words, final thoughts?
Well, just that knowledge is power, and without this knowledge, you may affect your mother, sister, daughter, fathers, sons, brothers, husbands, partners. So, it's not only women, it's the men that need to embrace this knowledge as well.
I realised, I did say they were final thoughts. I did have another question that came up from probably one of the first sentences that you said, which was around why do we still have this kind of stigma in 2023? So, what do you think we can do? It's 2023. Time has moved on significantly from 1988. What can we do to reduce the stigma that comes around women's gynecological cancers? Like, I sort of talk about the work that I do and say, we're not sexy. Things like breast cancer, they're sexy because you've got, as you say, you've got all the pink things, you've got the cricketers coming on board. What do we do to make this sexy?
My colours are red and black and white, and people say, oh, but you must have it purple or pink because, that's a female colour. But to me, the red is, it's fire and it's passion and it's, we want to be heard. But I think addressing the stigmatisation of vulva health requires comprehensive sex education, open conversations, destigmatising language, challenging the cultural norms, and promoting gender equality.
Oh, we can
By
knock that off
fostering
by Friday, right?
Yeah, right. But by fostering a more informed and accepting society, we can help reduce the stigma surrounding discussions about vulval health and promote overall well-being. So, you know, that's just about sums it up, I think.
It really does. I'm just, what off the top of your head, what do you think we can do around cultural norms?
Cultural norms? By again allowing people like me to come in and speak and sharing the gynecological health. Because I remember, I don't know whether you should put this in or not, I went to a cultural centre and spoke with these women, and they had a translator there. And I said, oh, you know, you need to have your pap smear. And this translator said in front of all of the ladies, she said, I've never had a pap smear. I was like, whoa, you know, it's just, I don't know whether I answered your question then, but it's not easy to converse what this is all about and has, look, for women to say, yeah, I want some of that, you know, because it's changing the cultural hundreds of years of social programming. So,
I think, as you say, providing opportunity for people like yourself, or for with the day that you did where the burlesque performer and one of the other parents got up and spoke, the more we provide opportunities for people to speak about it and people to hear about it, the more likely we are to change the way that, you know, the stigmatization that comes with it and those, some of those norms. And I think it really is just about people not being afraid to use correct terminology and people not being afraid to talk about it.
Yeah, well, exactly. But if anybody is out there that knows of any corporates that may be interested in me sharing the message, or just, not just corporates, but the thing is, people quite often expect me to do my presentations for nothing, and that's what happens about advocacy. You sort of think, oh, well, we won't, you know, don't need to pay them. But advocates work really, really hard and deserve to be paid.
Yeah, most definitely. And it, as you say, it comes down to the funding, and there isn't enough funding for anything for women's health. Any politicians that happen to be listening, we could all do with some more money. I've got a shopping list of things we could do with some more money for.
With your experience, we could organise a forum, a women's health forum next year sometime. And, you know, because you've got to find the people that have the experience like you and the ones that are willing to speak out. So let's see what we can throw together for next year and invite people to come along that are listening to this.
That sounds amazing. All right, and on that fantastic note, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing all about your experiences with your own cancer and then your advocacy work after that.
And thank you, and viva la vulva to you all.
100%. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of A Hidden World of Women, a podcast brought to you by Women's Health and Wellbeing Services. For more information on the services we offer, head to whws.org.au or Women's Health and Wellbeing Services on YouTube and social media. Looking forward to the next episode where we uncover the hidden world of women.